There is no shortage of ideas about what should be done to fix America's troubled public school system. I mean, some people think we should extend the school day. Some think we should go to a voucher-like system. Some think the charter school system will do the trick. Well, here's Spencer Christian of KGO-TV San Francisco with one of the foremost thinkers of our time with his ideas about what should be done to turn around America's public schools.
Our guest is known worldwide for his work that has influenced presidents and prime ministers, leaders in fields ranging from business to nonprofit organizations, as well as educators, psychologists, and social scientists. Together with his spouse and co-author Heidi, our guest has written such classics as Future Shock, The Third Wave, Power Shift, and War and Anti-War. Each has been hailed for originality, clarity, and unusual insight into the challenges and opportunities racing toward us. Their newest book is Revolutionary Wealth. Today, our guest continues to consult with national and world figures, and over the years, he has written and lectured extensively on education and the changes that need to take place in America's troubled public school system. He is Alvin Toffler. Mr. Toffler, welcome. It's good to have you with us today.
Thank you.
Let's start off by looking at what's going on in America's public schools today, and then we'll talk about some possible remedies. First, as you see it, how long have America's schools been in trouble, and when did this downward spiral begin?
Well, I don't know that you can give it a specific date, but I would say that the world for which young people need to be prepared began changing in the 50s. And the education system has made almost no adaptation to the changes that have followed. Let me go back before we explain what I mean by that.
Sure.
To talk a bit about history. Back in the 1800s, there was a big debate going on in the U.S. about whether there should, in fact, be public education or not.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, poor people were opposed to it. They said, we can't afford to send our kids to school. We need them to work in the fields with us. And otherwise, our family could go hungry. Rich people said, yeah, I think it'd be a good idea to have a public education. And this was a battle that went on for decades. Finally, business got involved, and that made the big change. What happened was, guys running businesses were getting kids off the farm to work in the factories. And they then found that these kids were not working well. And they complained. They said they don't show up on time. They're not responsible, and so forth. And what was happening, they said, was introducing a workforce from the fields into the factories, a workforce that was inefficient.
Right.
So they then said, what we need is to change the system. We want public education. And we want everybody to show up at the same time, because in the field, if you come late, Uncle Joe will fill in for you for 10 minutes.
Right.
But in the factory, if on an assembly line, if you show up late, you're holding up 1,000 workers downstream on the line.
Mm-hmm.
So it's expensive if you turn up late. So suddenly, being punctual became a major issue. Punching the clock when you came in became almost universal. And so forth and so on, and doing rote and repetitive work on the factory assembly line. And what we have is we have developed a school system that perfectly did the job that the business community wanted us to do back in the late 1800s.
Right.
It was called, and what the business people said they wanted, and they had a phrase they used, they said, we want, quote, industrial discipline. End
right.
quote.
Mm-hmm.
What we now have are schools, most of which essentially resemble factories.
Yeah. Well, it appears that up until about the midway point of the last century, and maybe a little bit beyond, into the 1960s, it appears,
mm-hmm.
the public schools were doing at least an adequate job of giving young people the skills they needed for the job market and for life. But beyond that point, it seems the public schools have been failing to adequately prepare people for jobs and for life. So why is that?
The key thing is that the pace of change increased during this period. We wrote Future Shock back and published in 1970,
mm-hmm.
and it was about the speed up of life and the speed up of business and work and everything else, and the rapidity of change. Well, the most resistant, the institution most resistant to change have been the public schools. Mm-hmm. And so what you have is what we now refer to as desynchronization. You have the business community changing at, and the economy changing at high speed, because if you don't change, your competitor will knock you out.
Right.
Therefore, everything is moving faster and faster. The technologies are moving everything, you know, to high speed. But and therefore, change is an everyday event in companies today. The places where kids are supposed to go get jobs, but the schools don't change. We have essentially the same system that we've had for a century or more.
Okay, what would you say are the main things that are wrong with public education today, and why can't the public school system change and correct these problems?
Well, first of all, let me say, this is, you know, I'm not, but my sister's a teacher. I understand, you know, this is not an attack on teachers.
Right.
But the system is wrong. And why? I think that there are very entrenched interests. You know, the union usually gets the big hit, is attacked frequently, and I think there's more than something to that. There's a resistance to change and a fear on the part of teachers who are not all that well paid and so forth, that they may very well lose their jobs. So, and you have a natural, you know, resistance.
Right.
But the system has to change. I mean, it's so much like a factory system. We have these yellow buses picking the kids up every morning.
Right.
That's preparation for a life of commuting.
Yeah, yeah.
But people are working at home. People are working. They don't go to the same place to work. They work in a hotel. They work in a restaurant. They work on an airplane. They work at home, not in the same, quote, the classroom that was the equivalent of the factory.
So in your view, what kind of change is needed in the schools? You talk about the need for change. What changes specifically need to occur?
Well, I think we don't know all the answers to that question, but there are surely you know, some experiments that we ought to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I've always thought, you know, I was never very good at math, and still not a genius at math. And I can remember saying what I think most kids say is, why do I need to know algebra? There is no motivation for
right.
me to know algebra when I'm a kid.
Right, right.
But what if you had a team of kids, a teacher, and maybe some people from the community go into the community to solve a problem? The problem could be traffic. The problem could be pollution. The problem could be something else to which a group could make a, you know, work on. But the solution to the problem requires knowing algebra.
Mm-hmm.
That somewhere in order to solve the traffic, we need to be able to do algebra.
Right.
So what you do is you explain, in effect, to the learnee, to the kid, why it's important to know something.
Right.
Rather than, I say, you need to know this.
Well, you know, there was a lot of talk about that concept in education back in the 60s and
70s,
making the subject matter relevant to real-life situations.
Right.
Whatever happened to that? It doesn't seem to have produced the desired results.
Yeah. The other thing, of course, there needs to be a recognition that education doesn't just take place in schools.
Yeah.
Kids are educated outside schools more than they're educated inside schools. They're educated by television. They're educated by all the stuff happening in the street. They're educated by the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, who are they educated by?
Right.
And in many cases, bad, you know, sources of education. But on the other hand, some very good ones. And one thing that I think we ought to contemplate is bringing community people into the school. If you're going to have a school, why not invite a pilot to talk about what he does? Kids would be fascinated.
Right.
Why not invite somebody who, you know, does something else that explains to the kids, this is what I do? Well, the answer, I think, the resistance to that, I think, is, again, you know, the fear of losing their jobs and their position in society. So teachers and or the union resist, I think, that kind of change. There are all kinds of things and experiments. Kids teaching kids. One of my close friends is an extremely intelligent guy who grew up in a, you know, poor neighborhood in Rhode Island, but the teacher recognized he was really smart, and he became a teacher in the school where he was a student.
Hmm.
At the same time.
Right.
So then you have why does everybody have to show up at exactly the same time? We don't at work anymore. Increasingly, there's no 9-to-5 schedule. It's true. It's still widespread, but it's moving. We're moving toward individualized schedules.
Right.
So all of these things that are becoming every day in the emergent economy are basically ignored in the school system, as far as I know.
Well, apart from teachers' resistance, what is standing in the way of introducing some of these types of changes you're mentioning? Because every study that we see seems to indicate that students at all levels of achievement, high performers, underachievers, and those in between, have a feeling of disengagement in the public schools. So it would seem that if we would implement some of these programs you're talking about, having the community more connected to the school, bringing in resource people to help with the, mm-hmm. the educational process, letting students teach a bit, that the kids who are bored might get turned on to learning.
Exactly. And I think that will happen when we make some of these changes. But fighting that, by the way, the resistance to change, and especially the organized resistance in the form of unions, is not an American phenomenon.
Right.
It's everywhere. It's in Japan. It's in every place. I can remember talking some years back with the president of Bolivia, I guess it was, and he made a modest proposal, that is, that kids, in the first 3 years, and instead of kids being put one grade ahead each time, sort of automatically according to the calendar,
right.
That in fact you let kid who is good in history go a little bit faster, and a kid interested in math go a little faster or slower. And the teachers went on strike and almost toppled the regime.
Yeah, well, there does seem to be a lot of resistance to the idea of letting students progress at their own pace in different areas, different academic areas. So paint us a picture of what your model school would look like.
I don't have one. I don't have one, and I don't think there should be a single model. I think
right.
there should be a vast variety of schools, and indeed they would be changed. The changes we're talking about would be, in effect, experimental.
So, and would the curricula be as different as the schools themselves? Would that change too, or should there be some standardized approach to a developing curriculum?
I'm opposed to standardization, by and large. I think kids ought to take a course in television, and how to read television, or for that matter, the net, and so forth. What are they seeing on their little handhelds? How do they interpret that? How do you make sense of a program?
And yet standardization is the big thing in most public schools these days, especially in testing. Maybe not so much
in
curricula,
horrible.
But yeah.
I think that's going absolutely backwards. The society starting post-war, and increasingly our society has become more internally diverse,
mm-hmm.
not just in terms of ethnicity, which is what we always talk about,
right.
but in terms of lifestyles, in terms of what sports we're interested in terms of what kinds of work are done. And so everything is becoming more diverse, more complicated in that sense, more forms of recreation, more forms of everything. So diversity rather than standardization are required. And if you look at what's happening in the economy for presumably these kids are going to be entering, we're going from mass production, which was one size fits all,
mm-hmm.
to increased diversity of output.
Right.
So when you go to the supermarket now, you don't see one brand of mustard, you see 50 brands of mustard, and they're different from one another.
Right, right.
So what we're doing is demassifying mass production. What's happening is we are increasingly targeting products for subgroups rather than everybody getting the same.
Right.
And it's not just products. We're demassifying products. We're demassifying lifestyles. We're demassifying all kinds of things in the society, creating a more diverse society, and indeed a more complex one as these diversities interact.
Right.
But the schools remain like fixed in stone.
So I understand that in recognition of the kind of diversity you're talking about, It is important to focus more on self-paced and mastery-based approaches to curriculum, with each child working at his or her own pace and in those areas in which they have the greatest interest. So if you can't give us a model for that, because obviously that brings in more structure than we need in public education, can you at least give us examples of how this would work? I mean, how does self-paced education work? Just give us some examples of how that might be effective.
Well, first of all, it may not be entirely self-paced. Mm-hmm. It may be some things you do in the classroom, some things you do outside the classroom, some things I was always rotten at mathematics,
right,
but I was good at English. Why not allow the kids who are good at something to do that in ways that they like to do or want to do it? Should they maybe do it at home or do it with a group of other kids and so forth? So there's not a single model, and I don't pretend to have the answers
right
to all of these questions. We're at the edge of having to invent a completely new form and forms of education. And I think it took Bill Gates a hell of a long time to get to say this, but he did say that we now cannot reform the education system. We got to replace the education system.
Yeah.
And that's scary for millions of people.
It is indeed scary. Well, it seems that most of our schools today focus so much of the testing on math and language skills, but physical education or development of the physical of physical wellness is overlooked or neglected. Character development aspects of education seem to be neglected. Do we need to pay more attention to the whole child in public education?
Well, add the arts.
And the arts,
add
right.
Add the arts.
Yeah.
As I say, I was awful at math, but I could draw reasonably.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So I think what we need to do is find out what individual kids are good at and encourage it.
What role do the parents play in the child's education? I mean, we've talked about community involvement, teachers being open to new ideas, administrators getting away from structured approaches to education. But if a kid has all the advantages and the stimuli needed in the school environment to learn, but isn't getting what he needs from the parent at home, that kid still isn't going to achieve, is he?
No, I think that's true, and the home is a much more is undergoing, you know, even more complex changes with changes in family, changes in the structure, more, you know, obviously more two working parents, and it's tough. Parents are as employees or workers with their own or if they have their own business or whatever, are running harder than ever, have less and less time, it's not only acceleration of change that's taking place, but desynchronization. So some things are working faster than other things, and sometimes they're out of sync with one another. And that, again, to go back to schools, the schools are changing. Well, business is changing at 100 miles an hour. Schools are changing at, you know, 0.5.
You're right, right, right.
And so that's a real fundamental challenge to the structure of our society. As to, you know, the practical ways to deal with this, I'm not necessarily the best source.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of very creative people out there who have ideas about what could or should be done. And we're at a stage where we should let 100 flowers bloom in terms of how to educate.
Well, if we're going to convene a group of people who could come up with some ideas that might improve public education, might have an immediate impact, what kinds of people would you pull together? I mean, obviously people from the field of education, but we would pull business people in, would we pull community leaders, clergy people? Who needs to be a part of this discussion that can advance education and get it moving at the pace of the rest of society?
I think we need, what I'm saying is we need a far more diverse education system,
yeah,
and we need a diversity of people working on that.
Right.
I think we need people from the community. I know a Latino lady. She's a housekeeper. But she also serves on the local community board.
Right.
You know, she's a smart lady, and she knows the community and so forth and so on. Well, why should she not be the kind of person who can contribute to helping to form a new kind of school, a school system?
Right.
She has the brains to do that, even though her job title doesn't reflect that. So I would say, and I, you know, I always use the example of the pilot, because kids are interested in pilots. But sports figures.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. Well,
why not?
Most kids seem to be interested in sports. So yeah.
Why shouldn't some hero? They're obviously they're intelligent athletes as well.
Right.
Why not draw on them, and artists. And, of course, workers, but also employers.
You know, I'm fascinated by the idea, by all these ideas, but you especially got my attention with the concept of the sports figures coming into the classrooms, because most kids relate to sports figures. They see these people as heroes, right?
Heroes.
So if a sports figure comes into the classroom and talks about certain principles that are important in sports, like hard work, discipline, showing up on time, good sportsmanship, teamwork. Those are principles that can be applied in the learning process as well.
Yeah, they can. And the athlete could also say, "But I also happen to learn French, and it was pretty good and valuable for me."
That's right.
I'm pretty good at math, so I can figure out how far to hit the golf ball.
And I also had to learn some business skills, so I'd know how to negotiate a good contract.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I think kids would be fascinated.
Well, I don't know what it's going to take to get teachers and administrators to be open to the idea of using these other resources that are out there in the community outside the classroom to enhance the quality of what goes on in the classroom.
I think the first thing, on a large scale, if we want to do this, I think we have to kind of guarantee their income, that you're not going to be dumped out on the street if we make these changes.
Right.
And that maybe what we do is you go to school also.
What about teacher accountability? Do we need to make sure that we are putting people in the classroom to teach who actually have the skills to teach? And how do we measure that?
Oh, those are really, you're asking a whole bunch of really good questions that go beyond my skills. I don't know how you find that out in advance of trying out a person. And by the way, the same discussion is going on all over the world now. I mean, we're just back from Tokyo. It's going on, and it's Korea. I mean, you think we have a rigid system? Korea, our friends in Korea have kids who are going to school, and this is the competition. The kids going to school start in the morning, come home, go back, have dinner, and some of them are going to private schools until 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, my gosh.
11 o'clock at night. We visited in Tokyo a juku. A juku, the system there was, the kid went to school, the regular school, came home at about 3 o'clock and had the proverbial glass of milk, or their equivalent of it,
right,
and then went back to a private school afterwards because they wanted to get into university, right? Good one.
Right.
So we visited this at night. We were there at 10 o'clock at night. And here were kids, Japanese kids, studying remedial calculus.
Wow.
At 10 years old.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
10 years old.
And our
now,
kids
the question
think,
is, you know, what are they giving up by keeping kids in a classroom for all those hours?
Do you think maybe a 12-month school year would produce better results? I mean,
well,
do we have to be
problem. Why do we have a summertime off?
Yeah.
You know, it's agricultural, for heaven's
sake.
Sure,
it goes back to a time that, for the most part, no longer
relevant.
Relevant, right, that's
and
right.
And the answer to that, I think, is why is there one time for everybody to be off?
Yeah, yeah.
If my dad is available, you know, in March and has a few days off from work then, why can't I take those days and stay home and go on a trip with him or something in March rather than in the summertime.
Yeah. Well, Alvin Toffler, it has been a great pleasure picking your brain, so to speak, on these issues, as you are one of the great thinkers of our time. And let's hope this discussion at least triggers more discussion and will lead to the kinds of changes that need to take place to make our public education more effective. It has been a great pleasure having you with us today.
Alvin Toffler is certainly one of the great minds in America, and he does not mince his words when it comes to fixing our public school system. Now, Joel, are any of the ideas Toffler just spoke about going to be incorporated into the Arete School?
Well, absolutely, Martin. And, you know, Mr. Toffler has been writing about education for at least two decades, probably three decades now. And he's quite well-versed on the subject. And so one thing we're going to do is we're going to expand the school day, but we're not doing the same kinds of things. What we're really saying is we're going to expand the school day so the kids and their families have the flexibility as to when they're going to be in school. And so not everybody has to be there from, our school is going to be from 7 in the morning till 6 in the evening, but you don't have to be there all that time. You know, people need to take care of going to the dentist, or there's this or that, whatever it might be. But the point is that there's this flexibility that's built into the school day. And we're also going to have available from 6 till 9 in the evening, any child who wants to be there, even though the teacher isn't there, we're going to have people from the community, as Mr. Toffler talked about, involve the community. Mm. We're going to have people from the community come in and staff the classrooms. So if the kids want to continue to work into the evening, they will be able to do so, because maybe they had to be gone for 2 hours during the day or something like this. And so the classrooms will be open. The people from the community won't know all the specifics of what the kids are working on, but for general questions and things like that, they'll be there to support the kids. So this integrates the community with the school. It gives flexibility into the schedules of the kids and their parents, and it expands the learning experience as far as time and the outreach into the community. And the other thing that is paramount that Mr. Toffler talked about is kids studying what they're interested in.
Yeah.
You know, this generic thing of you study math first period and language arts second, it has to be in a context where there's significance and relevance to a kid's life. And through the Arete School of Sport, Culture, and Wellness, and especially kids' love of sport, this is going to happen. So we hope people understand this type of learning. We hope they support this kind of learning. And if they want to see it happen, they can contribute to the Arete School by clicking Donate just below this screen and making a contribution.